From Hollywood, NBC brings you Hedda Hopper. Hedda Hopper, who daily reports to 30 million readers in America and 8 foreign countries, now reports to you on the air. Here is Hedda Hopper's Hollywood, from the desk by the window, looking right down on Hollywood and Vine. And here she is, Hedda Hopper.
Hello, everybody. Look over my shoulder while I write my column. We'll have news about famous people and personal visits with Joseph Cotten, Betty Hutton, Van Heflin, and Bob Hope. Okay, let's go. Mrs. Robert Montgomery is in Las Vegas divorcing her husband. In 4 weeks, Bob will be legally free to marry the wealthy Mrs. William Harkness. The Montgomerys have been married 22 years. They have 2 children, a girl 17 and a boy 14. The Errol Flynns arrive in Hollywood next week. Errol's former mother-in-law, Mrs. Eddington, tells me there's absolutely no basis of fact in the suit brought against him in France, because on the date contained in the charges, Errol was in Jamaica with his ex-wife, Nora. Sylvia and Clark Gable's only argument is about his ranch in the valley, which he loves. She prefers city life, also an English butler, but nothing would induce him to part with his Negro butler he's had for 17 years. Joel McRae's 14-year-old son, David, won't work in his father's new picture. He explained that since both parents are acting, that's enough for the family. Besides, he's too busy raising pigs. And he said, Dad, there'll always be a market for my kind of ham. After 18 months separation...
Hey, do you mind if I interrupt?
What?
He said it's very important, Miss Hopper. It's Van Heflin.
Yes, I can see it's Van Heflin, but...
I know you're working, but that's why I'm here. Hedda, I've been hearing how people get a chance to talk back to you in your office.
That's right. There's 2 sides to every question.
Well, I wanted to give you a chance to talk back, so I invited myself.
What on earth?
Well, if it works one way, it'll work the other, won't it?
You mean I've got to defend myself again?
Hedda, look, you're a columnist. You represent Hollywood.
Well, so do you, don't you?
No, I mean to the world. You write about the place. But do you think people outside of this town really understand it, really know what it's like?
You mean our public relations or stories we write about the stars?
I think sometimes we don't have any public relations. Sometimes I think we're understood and liked about as much as the average mother-in-law. But it's our fault. From top to bottom, it's our own fault.
What happened to you?
Rapid City, South Dakota happened to me. Population 27,000. And the people very nice. I spent a couple of months there.
Oh, and... on the location trip for Tomahawk, your new picture for Universal International.
Yeah, that's the one. 2 months, Hedda, of answering questions. Why? Because people all over this country have never met any movie people before. All they know is what they read in the papers, fan magazines, and what they see on billboards. The ballyhoo, the malarkey, the tabloid stuff.
I'm beginning to understand.
Well, why do we let people get such wrong ideas? Why don't we do something about it?
Well, if you're talking about gossip...
No, I mean starting with our pictures themselves. What happens? The housewife picks up her newspaper. Which movie tonight? There's a bunch of ads. But how is she going to tell? Each picture in town is stupendous. It's colossal. It's an epic.
Well, I've never heard of any advertiser who didn't boost his own wares.
Oh, but Hedda, now really, a picture has a cast of all men. Well, what's on the ads? A woman, naturally, and undressed.
You object to that?
Well, don't misunderstand me. No, the whole idea is false.
Oh, in other words, you'd like to start a campaign for more truth in advertising.
Well, every other business has tried it years ago, but I'm not just trying to put the blame on the over-exaggerated advertising our producers use.
But you know, this goes back years, Van. 25 years ago, every studio slogan became, "Our next one's got to be bigger than Ben-Hur." Now, it's got to be big enough for an Academy Award. Now, I'll grant you, lots of small pictures are being turned out that are much better than the big ones. But their producers don't have enough money to exploit them. And if a picture doesn't go well, many people in this large industry suffer.
Well, we'll suffer more if our audiences get farther and farther away from us, Hedda. Now, look, I'm to blame. 2 actors are to blame. Sure, it's a large industry, and I'm proud to be part of it. And we're really now turning out better and better pictures all the time. So now's the time that we should be getting closer to the public, getting them to understand us and trust us.
Well, what do you think actors should do about it, then?
Hedda, we ought to take every chance we can get to explain ourselves.
I'm sure you did in Rapid City. I'm just surprised you're not the mayor.
No, people really want to understand us, Hedda. And actors can certainly help by not not trying for cheap publicity.
The sensational stuff never did anybody any good, I'll admit.
Well, you can certainly say that again. But explain everything, the facts. What we're like. Now, look, I don't own a fur-lined swimming pool, but it's certainly embarrassing to me to find that people think I do.
You believe personal appearance tours help, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Well, I've seen a lot that don't. Some leading men who can't really do anything to entertain just stand up, show their teeth, and say, "Gee whiz, I'm glad to be here, folks." Now, that doesn't do much good.
Well, no, that's granted. But I guess I mean just meeting people and talking to them like a human being.
Many producers feel that a curtain of glamour should be kept around Hollywood. That a lot of our appeal lies in that.
That's why I picked you to argue with. You sell glamour.
Well, I try to write what's true about the town.
Well, it's no good with that curtain around it.
You know, there was a day when it had to be there. We had people who wouldn't have been stars without that tinsel.
I know, but this is 1950 and the world's changed. We've grown up in this town. We're real. And people want us that way. They want to understand. All they need is the chance. And
you've just had that chance. You're already in the column. Why do you think I let you come barging in here to interrupt it? Now, go on. Go on, young man. Run along. You've sold me.
All right. Goodbye.
And as I started to say a few minutes ago, after 18 months separation, Robert Hutton and Cletus Caldwell are getting together to discuss a divorce. When he's free, Bob plans to wed actress Bridget Carr. Nancy Guile, picture star, leaves for New York to catch the opening of Guys and Dolls, produced by her fiancé, Ernie Martin. While there, they'll decide upon a wedding date. Nancy thinks it will be around Christmas, but the guy alone isn't taking her east. She's one of the dolls who invested money in his play. Election day hasn't rolled round yet, but here's my private poll. In the state of Michigan, 2 weeks from now, there'll be a new lieutenant governor, a woman. The citizens of Lansing, Detroit, and Battle Creek each will have a new mayor, the same woman. Who is she? Well, this political bombshell is a girl who's bounced right straight through life, Betty Hutton. Believe you me, it's no mean trick to catch her between bounces. I finally managed it, though, the other day by crashing into an RCA Victor recording session to grab her before she gets all those honorary titles and flies out of town.
Well, you see, Hatter, the reason I'm going is for the opera.
All right, look out, ladies. Look out. We're moving the piano.
It's a three-ring circus, isn't it?
Oh, no. This is just normal. But we have to get the records out, you know. Music for my new Paramount picture being premiered at the Michigan Theater in Detroit, November the 16th.
Slow down, or you'll burst before you get there.
It's my new picture, Let's Dance, with Fred Astaire. Oh, look out, jump!
I'll be set up in a second, Miss Hutton. All right, boys.
But you'll be back home for the opening, won't you? It's about that, too, isn't it? Local girl makes good, Cinderella returns.
Oh, sure. That's where I'm from, Hedda. Boy, oh boy, what a difference. Things were pretty rough in the Hutton family when I was a kid. You know, one jump ahead of the bill collectors and...
I know, your mother told me.
A good thing, Hedda. Now we'll even have police escorts. Boy, will Mom love that. Cops in front of us instead of behind.
Oh, tell me about Let's Dance, Betty. How did you like Fred Astaire?
Oh, he's so wonderful. You know, now I can go to the movies and that lucky girl dancing with him is me. I don't just jump around to make funny. And this one, I actually dance like a lady instead of a man.
You've always been a good dancer, Betty.
Gee, have I? I wish I'd known that. Well, I worked 3 months getting ready for those routines, Hedda.
And they're beautiful. And you got to sing a ballad, too.
Yep, I'm a very happy woman. You know, I love sentimental songs. Yet everybody always thinks of...
Doctor, lawyer, engine chief, I know. The rootin' tootin' murder, he says. How does the ballad go, Betty?
Huh? Do you mean it? Do you think I'm a sweet and dainty type singer?
Well...
Listen. Hey! Get us a little quiet, will you, boys?
Hey, we're set up now, Miss Hutton. You ready to record the hot number?
No, wait. Hey. Hedda, you know, it's not every day somebody appreciates my gentle side. I said shut up, guys! Hedda, come on over by the piano here with me. Come on.
Gangway, fellows, make way for a couple of dames.
Why, oh, that's lovely. The feeling, the fabulous feeling, the fantasy, we're face to face with romance. I miss the magic, the moment of magic. Relax and give it a chance. We're right on the kiss number one. There's no time to stop and think. It's too late to run. The beginning has begun, so why fight the feeling? The feeling that started us reeling. Why fight the feeling that says tonight is the night? Why fight the feeling when it's all so fine?
Oh, that's lovely, Betty. You know, you're a mixture of everything, aren't you?
Yeah, Hutton with a broken heart.
Okay, boys, sweep it up and throw it out the window. It's me now. Let her rip.
His eyes, his nose, his fingers, his toes. His smile when he just breathes, and when he sneezes, his arms, chest, coat, vest. His everything is sweet and sweet. A giant time announcer, I can't stop talking about him, and talking about him, and talking about him. I can't stop talking about the man that I adore. Can't stop talking about him, and talking about him, and talking about him. I can't stop talking about him, and though I've seen before. Can't stop telling about him, and yelling about him, and telling about him. I can't stop hollering over the moment that we met. He had a pinstripe, what do you call it? A beautiful smile, a barrel of money. I can't stop talking about him yet. Just me and a bell went, boy. Whistle went, whoo! That door open and a friend right there.
Michigan. That typhoon's on its way back again. Run for the storm cellars. Look out, it's Betty Hutton. Fred Astaire loves racehorses, but he loves his country more. He'll be among those missing at the Hollywood Park opening on Tuesday. He'll spend that day driving people who otherwise couldn't get there to the polls to vote. Lauren Bacall's playing tennis like mad these days. I ask if she plans to enter the Wimbledon tournaments when she and Humphrey Bogart go to England next spring. Naturally, she replied, I'm already designing my black satin tights. Although Edmund Gwenn has made four fine pictures since January, he's been living the entire year in a hospital. His trouble, arthritis. Very few people know how the beloved Santa Claus of Miracle on 34th Street has suffered. Every actor I know has an idea of the best part he ever played. Confidentially, you and I usually have different ones. But somehow, the comedian always sees himself as Hamlet. The character actor remembers that one forgotten flop when he got the girl. With this in mind, I really look forward to visiting one of Hollywood's most charming and handsome leading men, the star of Third Man and RKO's new hit, Walk Softly, Stranger. I'm referring, of course, to Joseph Cotten. I found Joe in his dressing room at 20th Century.
My best part, Hedda? Well, come and sit down. Let's talk about it.
Hello.
Just checking, Joe. You say it's Uncle Charlie in Universal's hit picture, Shadow of a Doubt.
That's right.
Well, you see, it never fails. What does the handsome leading man pick? A villain. And what a villain.
Well, there was once a famous clown who played a gravedigger in Hamlet, and he did all right, too. But in Shadow of a Doubt, it wasn't just being a villain I liked, Ted. It gave me a chance at a unique and complex character. Remember, it started with just the shadow of a doubt.
Yes, I remember.
That's right. And unfolded as softly and slowly as the strains of the waltz that counterpointed the picture.
Go on, Joe.
Well, it could be framed in the waltz, I guess, the story of Uncle Charlie. I went to Santa Rosa, California. I went there in a hurry to visit the only family I had. My sister, Emmy, foolish, sentimental Emmy, and her husband and the children, just an ordinary small family in an ordinary small town. And to them, I was the exciting, wealthy man from the cities, Uncle Charlie. They didn't know that I had to be in Santa Rosa then. I had to have a place to hide. And it might have been perfect if it hadn't been for my niece, for young Charlie.
Oh, I can't explain. You came here and Mother's happy, and I'm glad she named me Charlie after you. And she thinks we're both alike. I think we are, too. I know it.
Yes. Young Charlie, 19, named after me, her adored uncle. And that was the trouble. When a young girl loves anyone, she becomes curious. She wants to know everything. She notices.
Listen, what is that? I mean, the wall.
I don't know.
Oh, yes, you do, Uncle Charlie?
It's Blue Danube walls.
Oh, of course, that's what it is. No, it isn't, Uncle Charlie. It's not the Blue Danube. It's the Merry Widow.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've set your glass here. Hand me the napkin.
No, it's so right, Uncle Charlie.
Yes, she noticed, just a girl. And she noticed one night at dinner when I spoke about older women. You see, I wasn't like most men. I wasn't like anybody in the world. And when I spoke, maybe I sounded angry. Now, listen to me, all of you. Women keep busy in towns like this, like in Santa Rosa, but in the cities, it's different. The cities are full of women, middle-aged widows. Their husbands are dead. The husbands who have spent their lives making thousands and working and working. And then they die and leave their money to their wives, their silly wives. And what do their wives do, these useless women? You see them in hotels, the best hotels by the thousands, eating the money, drinking the money, losing the money at bridge, playing all afternoon and all night, smelling of money, proud of their jewelry. Proud of nothing else. Horrible, faded, fat and greedy women. And I should know. Their dear Uncle Charlie had killed four of those rich older women himself. Yes, that's who I was. That was my secret. That was what young Charlie was beginning to notice, beginning to find out. A ring, a scrap of paper, the way I couldn't help acting, all told her, but slowly and... slowly, until she wasn't sure of it herself. And then one night she saw it in the library. A newspaper story about the Merry Widow killer. About the man the police weren't sure of. The man they couldn't catch the next day.
You're my uncle. You're my mother's brother. We thought you were the most wonderful man in the world. The most wonderful and the best.
Charlie, what do you know? You think you know something, don't you? You think you're the clever little girl who knows something, but there's so much you don't know, so much. What do you really know? What do you know about the world? Do you know that it's a foul sty? Do you know that if you rip away the fronts of houses, you'll find swine? The world is a hell. What does it matter what happens in it? You're afraid to wake up, afraid to learn. Are you silly enough to imagine that what I've done is important to anyone? Wake up, use your wits, learn something.
I'm only asking you one thing. Go away and leave us alone.
Why? What have you to tell? Who'd believe you? A waltz runs through your head. You don't like the initials in a ring. You connect it all up with a newspaper clipping, and now you haven't the ring. I don't know what became of it.
You have it.
Oh, no. No, dear, I gave it to you.
I don't want you here, Uncle Charlie. I don't want you to touch my mother. I don't want to live with a lie. Go away. I'm warning you. Go away. Or I'll kill you myself. You see, that's the way I feel about you.
All right. All right, Charlie, I'll go. You win. I'll take the train in the morning. Yes, I'll take the train in the morning, and I did. I couldn't hide in Santa Rosa anymore. My hope of peace was gone. But, of course, the family would have to come down and see me off, wouldn't they? My sister with the tears, my brother-in-law with the small-town talk. Dear, dear Uncle Charlie leaving town. But who would be the last person to say goodbye? Well, the only one of them who wanted to say goodbye, wouldn't it? Yes, young Charlie. What's the matter, Charlie?
The train. I'd better get home.
Just looking on another car, I think.
Oh, it started to move.
No, no, it didn't. Door's still open down at this end. Come on, will you? Let us try it, please. Oh, right through here. What are you jumpy about, Charlie? I'm leaving. You should be happy. Here.
No. Oh, they're taking up the steps. The door's closed. The train is moving. I can feel it.
Take it easy. We can open it again. There. See? Barely crawling.
Oh, yes, I can still step down on that.
Wait a second. That's all.
What? Just go away from my arm.
You've been a foolish girl, dear.
What?
Now, wait till we're going a little faster.
Let go of me. You're mad. You're a madman.
A little faster. Just a little faster. I don't want you to be hurt. See, watch the other track.
No!
Yes, it won't hurt so much now. Now!
Charlie, don't! Don't! Charlie,
don't! Holy smoke, sister. That guy, was he fighting with you? Was he trying to...
No, no. He just slipped. He fell. The accident. He was my favorite uncle. And on the way to my office, I made a mental note. Sometimes actors are quite right about their best parts. Case in point, Joseph Cotten. Congratulations to Tallulah Bankhead, who starts her new radio show tomorrow night over the same network. Among her star guests, she'll have Jimmy Durante, Danny Thomas, Ethel Merman, and Jose Ferrer. Early this morning, with 1,000 others, I was at Lockheed Airport to welcome Bob Hope home from Korea. And just before his meeting with the press, we went into a private office.
Bob, it's wonderful to have you back. I think you deserve all...
Wait, Heather. I don't deserve a thing. Now, wait a minute. I've seen the kids that deserve a lot out there fighting in Korea. One of the dirtiest wars of, the theaters I traveled during the last war. And I've never seen anything like this. I've seen so many kids lying on flat boards in those hospitals that have been shot in the back. Because this has been dirty warfare, where a North Korean will slip out of uniform into a civilian's outfit and still retain his gun, and then back up on these kids. I've seen so many bad burn cases over there. And this is really a rough, rough war. I had the pleasure of having lunch with General MacArthur, and he explained there's never been warfare exactly like this because it's sort of a combination of a gangster and soldier.
How do they feel about General MacArthur?
They love him. They love him. He's done a tremendous job over there. Tremendous administrative job, especially in Japan. The Japanese people are wonderful, and they think they're getting along better now than they did before.
Oh, that's grand. But now tell me about the boys. They're all so young, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. The whole thing looks like
a
boys' town, you know? They're very, very
How did they get them so young, Bob?
Well, they drafted them. They never expected this war. They took the 18 and 19-year-old kids, and we'd go from bed to bed and check with them, and you'd see these little faces, and you'd say, how old are you? And a lot of kids are 17. I don't know how they got in.
Oh.
But they're all young, and they weren't really ready for this war.
Tell me, what was your biggest audience, and where?
Let me see. I think Guam, we had about 20,000, and in Pyongyang, we must have had about 16,000 there.
Really?
Yeah. And by the way, at that time, we thought this whole Korean situation was going to be a mop-up. All they have to do is pull these North Koreans in and put them in the stockade. And, of course, you know what's happened in the last couple of days.
I know. This is horrible.
A lot of those kids we played for in Pyongyang are now out. They're gone.
Oh, Bob, this is dreadful.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, what can we ever do to stop it?
Well, I think this United Nations now that's starting to work, I think that's our only hope.
Thank you, darling.
Fine.
You've been wonderful.
Thank you, Heather.
And when I got back to work, I thought about the United Nations. Yes, it's the greatest thing men have ever tried to bring security. Security means freedom from danger, anxiety, doubt. In its pure sense, it's always been the basic aim of mankind. In prehistoric time, men hewed caves in granite that he might be safe from the elements, secure from beasts of the field. Downward through the ages, one thought has been uppermost in his mind. Security for himself, his family, his nation. A desire for security knows no borders, race, or creed. It's universal. It begins with the parent. Can I provide the necessary security so that my child can grow strong and healthy? That's the first question a father asks himself as he looks at his newborn child. In America, we've brought security to the highest level yet attained by man. We have confidence in ourselves, our way of life. We believe our institutions, carved from the experience of centuries gone before, are safe and sound. But are they? Blessed with the bounties of nature, have we come to view this basic aim of man as something to be taken for granted? Security means much more than just easy living. We're constantly demanding more security, but doing so little individually to retain what we already have. We're constantly ducking our responsibilities and passing the buck to Uncle Sam. Next Tuesday, everyone who fails to cast his or her vote will have ducked their greatest of all responsibilities. They will be civilian slackers. Our duty is the election of right thinkers and uncompromising Americans to fight for right and security. Otherwise, security as we've known it will vanish from our land.
Next week, NBC will again bring you Hedda Hopper with more headline news from Hollywood. There'll be an important statement from a national figure, a visit with the most decorated soldier of World War II, Audie Murphy, a high point of drama played by Barbara Stanwyck, and for a high point in music, the sensational star of South Pacific, Ezio Pinza.
Good night, everybody.
Make it 8 for next Saturday night for Hedda Hopper's Hollywood. From the ringside seat to desk by the window, looking right down on Hollywood and Vine. The Hedda Hopper Show is an FMB production directed by Gil Faust with music by Frank Wirtz. This is Harlow Wilcox bidding you good night.
Here's the big show tomorrow on NBC.